This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. We begin with breaking news. The United States military has struck Iran-backed targets in retaliation for attacks on U.S. forces in recent days. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said in a strongly worded statement that Iran wants to hide its hand and deny its role in these attacks against our forces. We will not let them. If attacks by Iran's proxies against U.S. forces continue, we will not hesitate to take further necessary measures to protect our people. He said the strikes targeted two facilities in eastern Syria used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and affiliated groups. Austin also said in the statement that the United States does not seek conflict and has no intention nor desire to engage in further hostilities, but these Iranian-backed attacks against U.S. forces are unacceptable and must stop. The White House says Russia is executing its own soldiers for not following orders. We get more on that story from the AP's Ed Donahue.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says not only are officers being executed, entire units have been threatened with death if they retreat from Ukrainian artillery fire.
And it's barbaric. But I think it's a symptom of how poorly Russia's military leaders know they're doing.
The release of this intelligence comes as President Biden is pressing the Republican-led House for more funding for Ukraine. Kirby says Russia appears to be using human wave tactics.
Just throwing masses of these poorly trained soldiers right into the fight. No proper equipment, no leadership, no resourcing.
Kirby did not provide any details on how many Russian troops have been executed. Ed Donahue, Washington.
And for details on more news, please join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Ukrainian pilots have started F-16 training here in the United States with the Arizona Air National Guard, bringing Kyiv one step closer to acquiring the U.S.-made fighter jets that Ukraine says it needs to help defend its sovereign territory and citizens from Russian troops. The news comes as the United States announced on Thursday that it is providing up to $150 million in additional military aid for Ukraine. European Union leaders attending a summit Thursday call for pauses in Israeli bombing and Hamas rocket attacks to get humanitarian aid into Gaza. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, that is, said leaders of the Union's 27 nations expressed the gravest concern for the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Gaza.
Hamas has provoked a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. For the Commission, it's very important that we continue to intensify our efforts to deal with the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The aid needs to reach Gaza unhindered and quickly.
A community in the southern region of the U.S. state of Maine remains under lockdown as the search continues for a U.S. Army reservist accused of gunning down 18 people in mass shootings at two locations Wednesday night. We get more on that story from the AP's Jackie Quinn.
Chaos and horror around Lewiston, Maine. The sound of first responders from Broadcastify after at least 18 people were killed by a gunman at a restaurant and pool hall and a bowling center where Patrick Poulin's son usually practices. But for some reason this Wednesday night, he didn't.
Possibly to be a life-saving situation.
Poulin's brother, though, witnessed the devastation.
He doesn't know how he's going to unsee some of the things that he saw.
The suspect, identified as weapons instructor and Army reservist Robert Card.
Considered armed and dangerous?
The Associated Press has learned from a government source Card had been hospitalized this summer after his commanders were concerned about his mental health while training at the West Point Academy in New York. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi is in here in Washington for meetings with senior U.S. officials on bilateral and regional security issues ahead of a possible meeting between U.S.-China leaders next month. He's expected to meet separately Friday with President Joe Biden and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, just before a two-hour meeting with the Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Thursday afternoon. Wang told reporters China and the U.S. need to have dialogue that's in-depth, comprehensive, so that they can reduce the misunderstanding and return to the track of healthy, stable, and sustainable development. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, October 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The White House says Hamas civilian casualty claims are not reliable.
We all know that the Gazan Ministry of Health is just a front for Hamas. It's run by Hamas, a terrorist organization.
Saudi officials welcome the resumption of Sudan peace talks. The World Food Program suspends part of its assistance in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. We'll get an update on Senegal opposition leader Ousmane Sonko's hunger strike. Nigeria's main opposition is disappointed by the Supreme Court's affirmation of Tinubu's election.
The Nigerian people were expecting to see a different Supreme Court judgment. Now, our own court decide to make...
And Uganda's Makerere University Faculty Academic Staff Association rejects the introduction of a biometric attendance management system. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The White House is calling for news organizations to refrain from relying on casualty numbers in Gaza issued by Hamas. VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman in Washington has the story.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby at Thursday's White House briefing characterized information issued by Hamas, especially the numbers of dead and wounded in Gaza, as not credible and said news organizations should not rely on them.
We all know that the Gazan Ministry of Health is just a front for Hamas. It's run by Hamas, a terrorist organization.
The NSC spokesman responding to a reporter's question said the U.S. government, however, does not dispute that thousands of civilians have died from Israeli aerial attacks on Gaza since Hamas used the territory on August 7th to launch a raid into Israel, massacring hundreds of Israeli civilians. It is difficult for news organizations to independently verify casualty figures in Gaza. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, has expressed disappointment in Thursday's Supreme Court judgment affirming the election of President Bola Tinubu in the February polls. In a statement sent to VOA, the PDP said the ruling was a sad commentary for Nigerian democracy. Atiku Abubakar and Peter Obi of the Labour Party had challenged Tinubu's victory. President Tinubu has called on Abubakar and Obi to collaborate with him in building Nigeria. Yunusa Tanko is the Labour Party spokesperson. He tells me that the court decision destroyed the remaining trust that Nigerians had in their judiciary.
The Nigerian people were expecting to see a different Supreme Court judgment coming from the fact that there are fresh evidence to indicate that the president-elect in court submitted a forged document in which the Supreme Court just threw it out with a wave of a hand, considering the fact that there was similar adjudication being done in Britain just recently in favor of Nigeria, where there were so much issue of technicalities wrong with it. But the judge, in his dry thinking, thought that they have better decision to make in the substance of the matter and still advocate in favor of Nigeria, talking about the PIB bill dragged on in Britain. Now, our own court decide to make technicality more supreme than the substance of the matter. So we are now held down with the position of a president that in which people in their heart are still doubting his legitimacy and his actually true identity.
But President Tinubu himself has responded following the ruling, calling for a time now to come together and build Nigeria.
Yes, he called for that, but it can only be done when you talk about a government that already had defeated the opposition under a clean or challenged position as regard to the processes of the election. But in this case, what we are talking about had to do with the identity of the president and which all of us have been challenged. There is no apology whatsoever to that particular issue being put by Bola Tinubu, neither has he cleared the air as regard to his true identity. Until those facts have been established, that is when political parties and all other people like me will ever consider probably working in that government, even though I'm not expecting any invitation. But at the same time, we will work on the opposition to continue to criticize some of the policies and the actions of this particular government in adding value to the system. Because actually, opposition is part of government. Whether in or out, you can make your own contributions to the development of a country.
Yunus Atanko is the spokesperson for the Labour Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A spokesperson for World Food Programme, the WFP, says the group is suspending part of its assistance in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, not just because of the recent uptick in fighting, but also because of a lack of funding. Shasta Mongorabi says from January to August, the WFP assisted 2.8 million people in Eastern DRC. She tells me that the agency urgently needs $629.7 million from now till February 2024 to continue its emergency assistance.
We were forced to cut assistance to about 3.6 million people in need in Eastern DRC because we do not have enough funds to sustain our operations. And this comes after months and months of warning that this day will come if we do not receive the resources that we need to support and reach those who need our support.
Is it because of lack of resources or because of the fighting that is taking place there?
The fighting and the conflict that's been intensifying is obviously driving hunger rates really high in the DRC. The reason why we were forced to make these cuts is because we do not have the financial resources. We're 100% dependent on voluntary funds. So we advocate to raise funds for the operations to sustain them. And unfortunately, this year in the DRC and elsewhere in a lot of operations, we were put in a very difficult situation where we had to cut simply because we didn't have enough financial resources to continue our operations.
When you talk about lack of resources, how much does WFP need to carry on your work?
We need about $876 million for our response in DRC. And what we have currently is less than 22% of that required amount. So the funding gap is at around $688 million.
There are many displaced people in the Eastern Congo. What can you tell us about the type of work you are doing there?
I mean, we're providing assistance and, of course, focusing on the most vulnerable. And that usually includes the displaced, the women, the children. And what's really unfortunate is DRC is a country that which has an abundance of resources. The fact that there is the conflict, which has been intensifying, disease, displacement, poor infrastructure, this has forced more than 25 million into crisis or emergency levels of hunger. This is why we are in the situation that we are today. Needs are growing, and at the same time, the financial resources are dwindling.
Shaza, funding is very crucial too, but there are some people who are saying, why can't the WFP stay because the people there need you most?
We are adamant and staying and delivering, and we are continuing to appeal for continuous funds. If we don't have the financial resources, unfortunately, as in other cases in other country contexts, we are forced to make painful decisions. And we cannot continue our operations if we don't have the funds to sustain them. And that doesn't mean that, you know, the vulnerability or the food security situation is better. No, absolutely not. We're very aware of the needs and we are adamant to stay.
Shasta, thank you so much again. A pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much.
Shasta Mongorabi is the World Food Program spokesperson in New York. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, October 27th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. So Some Sudanese civil society activists have welcomed the resumption of talks between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. One Sudanese woman activist says she is hopeful that the two warring parties will reach an agreement to end the war and restore stability across the country. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Saudi Arabia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a statement Thursday welcoming Sudan's two rival groups for talks in Jeddah after months of suspension. A statement from the ministry states, quote, "The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia welcomes the resumption of talks between the warring sides." The statement also called on the negotiators to abide by an earlier agreement announced on May 11th for the protection of civilians and a short-term ceasefire deal signed on May 20th. The statement further said, quote, "The kingdom affirms its keenness on unity of rungs to stop the bloodshed and alleviate the suffering of the Sudanese people," end quote. Both the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces accepted the invitation to resume negotiations in Jeddah. The Sudan Armed Forces announced on its official X or Twitter account that its representatives are already in Jeddah to participate in the expected talks. The Rapid Support Forces also stated their readiness to participate in the Jeddah talks. Suad Musa, a resident of Kassala town of eastern Sudan, says both the Sudan Armed Forces and the RSF have no other choice but to sit down and address the root causes of the conflict.
There is no other choice, and I believe this is the only peaceful way to engage the two warring parties since they have the upper hand in the country at the moment. They need to realize that there are others who also need to live in Sudan.
Sudanese activist Asad Attahir, who resides in the Ugandan capital Kampala, says he also welcomes the resumption of talks in Jeddah.
I expect that the mediators will present some solutions to both sides after they go through the stance of the two sides. But the most important and urgent at the moment is to reach a humanitarian agreement to safeguard the arrival of humanitarian aid to all the needy in Sudan.
Sudanese writer Meki Al-Maghribi says negotiations is the only suitable way to end Sudan's conflict. Al-Maghribi told VOA that there is a need for the two sides to recommit to a ceasefire and allow humanitarian access.
Peace talks highly recommended between army, RSF, political powers, Jeddah Forum, the efforts of United States of America, Saudi Arabia, are based on a clear humanitarian declaration. That is good.
Representatives of the African Union and the East Africa Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, are expected to attend the Jeddah talks. According to the United Nations, more than 9,000 people have been killed, while some 5.6 million people have been displaced from their homes since conflict broke out in mid-April. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The health of imprisoned Senegal opposition leader Ousmane Sonko took a dramatic turn when it was announced this week he is weak and had to be taken to an intensive care unit of the hospital in Dakar. Sonko is a candidate in next February's presidential election, but accused President Macky Sall of trying to deny him the right to compete. The president has denied the accusation. Nafisa Dia is a member of Sonko's African Patriots of Senegal for Work, Ethics and Fraternity Party. She tells me that Sonko went on a hunger strike to protest his condition and that of other political prisoners.
Exactly what happened. At some point, he kind of fainted because of low blood sugar, etc., because he's been on their diet for 9 days now, and he's very weak, so sometimes he just finds and, you know, they manage to wake him up again. But his life is endangered right now, and nothing is moving.
I read the statement where the lawyer said only the head of state can change the situation. Is that correct?
I won't really say him because nothing is maintaining him in detention right now. Maybe he said the head of state because he knows that we have no separation of powers in Senegal. the executive, meaning the head of state, is giving orders, comments to the legislative and the judiciary. And he's being imprisoned by the judiciary right now. But it's, you know, after a comment from the head of state.
But Nafisa, in the meantime, the February 24 elections are coming. Mr. Yes. Sonko is declared to be a candidate. What happens next now?
Yes, he is. What happens next is that since the state has contested the decision saying that Mr. Sonko should run for those presidential elections, we are waiting for the next hearing in front of the court to see what they will decide. Because other than that, nothing is preventing him from participating in those elections.
Nafisa, help our listeners to understand the hunger strike that Mr. Sonko is undergoing. Explain again, why is he on hunger strike?
He is on hunger strike because there were, I believe, 6 women on hunger strike. They should be not far from 12 days of hunger strike now. They are on hunger strike because they are being jailed in very, very disastrous conditions. Next reason is that, as you know, we have over 1,000 political prisoners in Senegal. You have minors, you have students, you have pupils, you have teachers, you have everything. You have women, you have men, you have ill people. That is the second reason. The third reason is his own imprisonment. They didn't bring any proof, nothing, just to put him out of sight and reach of the population who loves him. And that's why he went on hunger strike.
Nafisa Diah is a member of Usman Sonko's PASTEF party. She was speaking with us from Moncton, Canada. In Uganda, the Makerere University Faculty Academic Staff Association has rejected the university's decision to introduce a biometric attendance management system. The university said this is necessary to curb absenteeism and as part of government's integrated human capital management system to automate human resource management in the public service. Dr. Robert Kakuru is the chairperson for the Makerere University Faculty Academic Staff Association. He tells me the work of a university professor is different from that of an ordinary public servant whose work hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
The core mandate of the university, which academic staff are charged with, is teaching, research, and community outreach. And this mandate is different from the routine public service mandate whose working hours is 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. from Monday to Friday. Our mandate involves teaching, administering tests and exams, supervising internship, marking exams, marking proposals, dissertations for undergraduate masters and PhDs, conducting practicals and experiments, and many others, including conferences, writing projects, writing articles, writing books, and a range of community services. The challenge we are having is that they want to compress all this work to be done between 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. It is very strange. Our position is that these activities are not conducted from office only. Actually, most of these activities are conducted outside. But the university council and the university management argue that this business should be in office. And we are saying, look, if you want this work to be done between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. and in the office, you are likely to lose the university.
Can I ask you, Professor, because I understand what you are saying, but wherever you work, you must clock in. So the university is saying the biometric system is a way for them to monitor or to curb what they call absenteeism?
First of all, I want to make this very clear. The current proposed system will not fight absenteeism because someone can come in and clock in and they exit and they come back and they clock out in the evening. Does that cure that? But rather, our position is that this matter should be well understood, and if it is to be applied, then it has to be a well-thought idea of how do we monitor performance of the work. Clocking in does not monitor your performance whatsoever, but rather it is like maybe they want to catch someone in an office, but it doesn't actually make one deliver, because if someone is unethical, still they would still clock in and get out. But we believe that academic staff have been instrumental in making sure that they do their work diligently, and those that have not been doing it, traditionally there have been measures for making sure that they are dealt with. So Our challenge is how this is going to be implemented.
So, Professor, you say that enforcement of this biometric system will lead to what you call brain drain. How would that happen?
We all know that if I have a timetable to teach, I should be in class and I teach. If you want me to account for all the time, then we'd rather hang up our boots and we go away.
Dr. Robert Kakuru is the chairperson of the Makerere University Faculty Academic Staff Association. He was speaking with us from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsor here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the latest FIFA rankings released on Thursday. Morocco remains Africa's top-ranked team, while Cote d'Ivoire dropped 3 places. The Atlas Lions stayed 13th globally after extending their unbeaten run last month. A 3-0 win over Liberia and a 1-1 draw with Ivory Coast kept Morocco top of the continent ahead of Senegal. Senegal is ranked 20th globally and 2nd in Africa, thanks to their 1-0 friendly win over Cameroon. Algeria's 33rd place worldwide is their highest position since June after recent steady improvement under coach Jamel Belmadi to close within 4 points of Tunisia in 3rd. The Pharaohs of Egypt are 5th, wrapping up Africa's top 5 football playing nations according to the latest FIFA rankings. Staying with African football, Osporon staged a second leg fight back to defeat TP Mazembe 3-0 and booked their place in the Africa Football League semi-finals. Having lost 1-0 in the first leg away from home, the Tunisian Giants rolled back at home to overhaul TP Mazembe with goals from Gahid Ouhabi, Osama Bogera and Mohamed Amin Tongel, sealing a 3-1 aggregate victory. Earlier this week, South African side Mamelodi Sundowns sealed their spot in the Africa Football League semi-finals despite being reduced to 10 men in the opening minutes of their 0-0 draw with Petro Atletico on Tuesday. Egyptian giant Al Hakli booked their place in the semi-finals also on Tuesday after a 1-1 home draw with Simba SC, which saw them through on away goals. In the meantime, Tunisian Football Federation President Wydee Jari has been arrested as part of an investigation into suspected corruption. He was arrested following a judicial complaint lodged by the Ministry of Youth and Sports concerning the illegality of a contract concluded between the Federation and a technical director. According to the ministry spokesperson Shokri Hamdi, the case is linked to financial corruption within the Federation. He is the subject of several investigations into match fixing, money laundering, embezzlement and corruption. Jari has always refuted these accusations with arguments. The much anticipated 2023 FIBA Zone 5 Women's Championship due in Kigali will begin this weekend. The week-long basketball showpiece serves as a qualifier for the 2023 FIBA Africa Champions Cup for Women, which will take place in Egypt from December the 8th to the 17th. FIBA Zone 5 Women's Championship will attract 9 clubs from 6 countries, with host nation Rwanda having 2 representatives. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa's Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Sporty greetings. This is VOA's Sonny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and VOAAfrica.com. It's the sunny side of sports.